Well, hello there, and welcome to my almost midlife crisis. I'm your host, Jennifer Mathis. This podcast is about trying to live your best life as we enter into middle age. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about happiness. What makes people happy, and what age do people generally feel their happiest? So if you've ever wondered if the saying, the best is yet to come, is accurate, then this one's for you. A new study recently came out asking Americans, if you could be one age for the rest of your life, what would it be? It's really interesting to think about, right? Because in a way, it's almost like our own version of Vanilla Sky, which depending on who you ask was either a total hit or a piece of shit. I personally always thought the idea of, you know, being able to preserve yourself for later to come back as fascinating. And I loved that movie and definitely loved the soundtrack. Although I will say the first time I saw the movie, I was like, what the fuck just happened? I mean, that movie takes more than once to watch it to like truly get it and love it. So if you only saw it once, maybe give it a second shot. Anyway, if you could be one age for the rest of your life, what would you pick? Turns out the answer was quite surprising because 25% of respondents said 36. Yeah, you heard me correctly. 36. Now, unfortunately for me, if that's true, then I kind of wish I would have realized that sooner. And I hope the rest of my life doesn't go downhill from here. But seriously, this is interesting because our society tends to favor youth. Yet 1 in 4 polled that they picked almost middle age as the year that they would want to just stay at. 59% of respondents said that they used to be obsessed with fighting the aging process and fighting Mother Nature, which was exhausting. And well, isn't this the damn truth? I mean, it is freaking exhausting. And I'll tell you what, I am really feeling the pressure right now as my wedding is less than a month before my 39th birthday. The pressure is on. I mean, your wedding day is pretty much like the adult equivalent of your senior prom. Well, not my senior prom because my date bailed on me last minute because he had to go to rehab for heroin. No, I'm not kidding, unfortunately. And who says the suburbs are a great place to raise kids? Guess what? That's not always the case. Shit happens in the burbs too, okay? But for most, senior prom starts with this like abundance of pictures taken by a whole gang of parents, okay? And by the time you get to the dance, your cheeks are already hurting from smiling for so long. And that's pretty much your wedding. But instead of just before the wedding, you have the whole night pictures and video capturing your every move and expression as keepsakes that you're going to look back on for the rest of your life. And you will actually go back. Like you'll watch your wedding video on your anniversary. Like your pictures will be probably in a frame in your house, right? You're going to look back on it. And unlike your senior prom, I really hope you don't go back and look at your prom pictures on a regular basis because that kind of like makes me sad. I mean, it's like those people who always talk about high school that are now like middle age or older. Like if that's the last time you did anything worth reminiscing about, I think it might be time to like reevaluate your life choices and maybe make some immediate changes. But having a wedding is, listen, it's pressure enough to look good. Have you picked up a bridal magazine lately? Because every ad or article in it that's not about actual wedding ideas is how to look your best for your big day. I mean, there are bridal diets, which are really get freaking crazy, like cleanses and like juice only diets and fasting. And listen, I'm not trying to, that is not me. I mean, I'm trying to be healthy and I want to look good. But I am not one of those brides that's going to starve myself to lose weight. I mean, I get hangry. I mean, you can ask Christian. You can pretty much ask anyone that comes in contact with me. I get real hangry. And you do not want me to just not eat for even a couple hours, let alone days. And like juice isn't going to cut it. Are you kidding me? Like, I don't know. It's not worth it to me. It's not my style. But brides, it's not just about the diet. They go tanning. They get their teeth whitened. They even get plastic surgery prior. I mean, isn't there like a whole reality TV show about that? Like, I'm pretty sure I've seen some like crazy thing where the bride gets a bunch of stuff done. And then it's like, is he going to like it when she shows up? Could you imagine asking someone to marry you, right? Like you love them. You think they're beautiful. And then like They literally get so much work done that the question is if you're going to like it or if you're even going to like recognize them when they come down the aisle. Like, that's not the time to surprise somebody. Like, that's not, you don't decide like, okay, he wants to spend the rest of his life with me. Now, like, let's just see how much he loves me, because if this shit goes botched, you know, I hope he still says I do. I mean, that's not, it's just not the time for like surprises like that. Right. I mean, my dentist gives free teeth whitening to brides and grooms, which, I mean, listen, awesome. I mean, free. I live in Chicago. There's not much you get for free, at least nothing that you want. Okay. So, well, this is great, and I will fully take advantage of this. What does that even tell you about the expectations on looks for the wedding day, that a dentist will give you like a $200 service for free? Like, that says a lot. My dress designer, I mean, God bless her. I just had my latest dress fitting after a year on pause due to the beloved COVID. And I kept thinking, why do I have to come in early April? Like, last time I saw the dress was March 2020. It was in pretty good shape. And I have another fitting late June before my final fitting. So like, what is the purpose of this one? Well, apparently it was to see if I had gained weight since the last time I met with her, so she could determine if additional adjustments would need to be made to the dress. So when she got me into the dress, she like zips it up, and I'm not even kidding you. She literally says, oh, wow, you're the same size as last time. Great job. And like, I'm not going to lie, this was actually really amazing to hear, because like most people, I definitely gained COVID weight, probably like 10 to 15 pounds. But I have been busting my ass since October. Okay. I have been hitting that Peloton like six times a freaking week since October to undo COVID damage. Of course, I probably wouldn't have to do that much biking if I would just give up alcohol, or maybe like pizza and pasta, but whatever. So to hear I had officially undid my COVID-induced weight gain by the one person who would know better than anyone, because she knows my entire body measurements, honestly felt like I just won an Oscar. Okay. Like, best actress. Thank you so much. I'd like to personally thank, you know, Cody Rigsby, Allie Love, and Robin Arzon, because you helped me get here. Those are Peloton instructors, by the way. Yes, I know their full names, and I follow them on Instagram, and I would honestly cry if they walked in here right now, because I'm a fucking loser who's like obsessed. Okay. Whatever. So never since I have become a bride-to-be myself have I realized how much pressure brides are under to look their best on their wedding day. And that's for every bride. Like, every bride feels that pressure. I don't care if you're 22, which God help me if you're getting married at 22, or if you're 38, okay? But now add in that I'll be getting married just 2 weeks before my 39th birthday. And that's a whole new level of pressure. So much so that I have completely amped up my skincare routine. I finally made a consultation appointment for Botox. I know. Yeah. In my first episode, to Botox or not to Botox, I talked about the pressure to look young and how I was contemplating but still scared of Botox, and I didn't know if I was going to do it. Well, guess what? My upcoming nuptials provided me that final push to reach out and make an appointment. And I will say I'm thankful that Christian is not thrilled about it. Like, when I told him, I was like, hey, babe, so I like made this appointment for Botox. And he was like, why? I mean, it's one of the many reasons I love him. But whether it's the bridal pressure or wanting to undo the aging that came along with living through a global pandemic, I made the appointment. We'll see. I don't know if I'm going to like chicken out. It is just a consultation, but I'm also like too cheap to like pay the $150 consultation fee if I don't get it done. So I don't know. I don't know if like what's going to win over, like pressures of bride or like I'm too cheap to pay $150 for a consultation. I don't know. We'll see. I bet you they do that just so that people don't chicken out. But anyway, getting back to the study. So it was great to see that 71% of those polled shared that they believe it's become more common for Americans to accept and embrace their age, which I agree with this. And I also touched on this in my first episode, because I believe this is partially in thanks to Gen Z. Because they've made it mainstream to like have gray hair, and they're more accepting of body types than my generation ever was. And so really, we kind of have Gen Z to thank for part of that. But in reality, there's a difference between biological age and what they call chronological age, essentially the age you are and the age you feel. And the changes we see outside of our body, like wrinkles, are telling us what's happening on the inside. So it's kind of like the woman that literally lives at the pool in my building who reminds me of that older woman in Something About Mary, where she's like a weird, like mahogany wood color and is total leather skin and wrinkles. Like you see them all over Florida, right? But like we have one in Chicago in our building. So imagine what she has to do to her skin to live in Chicago and look at that. It is winter. I saw her the other day. I mean, it's no longer winter, it's spring. But in the winter, I saw her the other day and she still looks like it. So this is just permanent, yet she's out there every single day, from the day our pool opens to the day it closes. She literally like lives out there. Like, girl, you already, mission accomplished. Like, you don't have to keep that up anymore. Like, your skin is forever ruined now. And like, this is just what you look like, okay? So like, you don't have to put in the effort and the hours of sitting by the pool anymore. Like, this is it. This is where you're at. It's honestly quite terrifying. And it really, like, every time I'm down there and I see her, it just makes me actually like lather up more on the skin tan lotion, because I'm like, oh my God, like that is my worst nightmare to look like that. Anyway, I digress. I like literally saw her the other day. So she's top of mind. But what happens as you're getting older is our cells are starting to essentially call it quits, which sounds terrifying. But 63% of respondents said that they want to shift their focus from looking younger to feeling younger. And scientists agree that if we reduce things that put pressure on our cells, like sun exposure and excess alcohol consumption, which, listen, like, let's, okay, I feel like I'm willing to make other sacrifices. And if we add in supplements, then we do actually have a chance to age healthier. So the top things that people are trying to do to try to look healthier and age healthier are things like eating healthy, exercising daily, drinking water, adding to their skincare regimen, taking care of themselves mentally and emotionally. And I would say I would definitely be in this camp, right? Because while I'm also trying to look younger, or I don't know, maybe I'm not trying to look younger, but I'm definitely trying to look the same longer. Like, I know it's a losing battle to try to undo damage, but maybe I can just like press pause and hold where I'm at a little longer. But what's more important is that I feel good longer. I definitely eat so much healthier than I was in my 20s. Oh my God. It is like night and day. I mean, part of this is because my body literally fights me back if I don't eat healthy. But I do actually find myself more enjoying healthy food than I did when I was younger. Like, I actually like it. I'm not one of those people that's like, healthy food is delicious. And like, you know, this no fat, no salt, no like nothing piece of plastic tastes so good. Like, that's, but I have actually found that I could make healthy food and it still tastes good. And I enjoy it more than when I was younger. But don't get me wrong, pizza, Kraft mac and cheese, nachos, poutine, these things have a place in my heart that will never go away. But listen, there's a time and a place. It's called balance, people. Okay. And I'm probably in some of the best shape of my life due to my exercise routine. Because when I was younger, I mean, I don't know, I never really worked out. Like, I played sports and I kind of just like was just running around being active, but I never actually had to like go to the gym. But in my 30s, I have really stepped up this game. Part of it is because of Christian, because he's super big into working out, which is motivating, because listen, you just feel lazy if your partner is constantly working out and like doing races and you're always on the sideline, like drinking mimosas and cheering him on, which, listen, is fun. Okay. Like when he does the Iron Man, like I'm not trying to do an Iron Man. I can't even swim. I'm not doing an Iron Man and I will totally have mimosas and cheer you on. But like, you can't do that all the time. Then you just feel like a lazy piece of shit. I've always found like certain activities fun, like Peloton classes. They are fun. I mean, it's hard, but they're fun. Like I sing along. I like today I was doing a Beyonce strength class and I literally was like dancing to formation as I was doing bicep curls and it's fun. I also love playing tennis, which is fun. Of course, it usually is followed by like a 6-hour brunch, but it's fun and it's active. And I found ways to make typically boring exercises less boring, like running. When I'm running, I get tired of like the same playlist all the time. And I actually really have found, especially when I was doing my marathon training, because you're running like so much, you get real tired of music. And so I started listening to audiobooks or podcasts when I run. Like you should listen to this podcast when you run, hint, hint. I don't know, it like gives me this weird sense of multitasking that feels like even though I just ran X miles, I feel like even more accomplished because I also listened to a couple chapters of a book. And it's just more interesting and it makes time go way faster. I do love a lot of water. I drink a ton of it. I mean, when I'm at work, like in the office work, I have this 1 liter water bottle that I carry with me everywhere. And I'm not even kidding. I probably drink 4 to 5, if not more, just while I'm at work. So that doesn't even account for the morning or when I get home from work. And now even in work from home, I finish a water bottle during my morning workout. And then I'm like refilling all day. If I've learned anything as I've gotten older, water is the answer to most things. Like dry skin, drink water. Headache, drink water. Feeling sick, flu-like symptoms, drink water, unless you have COVID. Are you hungover? Drink water. Are you getting too drunk? Drink water. I mean, it's a cure for pretty much everything. Because, I mean, isn't like your body like 70% water or something? I don't even know. I would actually be curious if I just randomly pulled that stat out of my ass and it's correct. But it's like a high percentage of water. So, I mean, it makes sense. Your body like craves it and needs it. Right. And then, of course, making sure you take your mental and emotional health seriously, especially in work from home and in a pandemic. Yeah, I would say super important, sometimes hard, but really important. So it's probably why so many people have said that the pandemic aged them, which I definitely feel that for sure. So all of this is important. But what the study doesn't cover is why. Like why 36? Why is that the number? Well, according to Claire Mehta, who's an associate professor of psychology, the 30s and early 40s are more rewarding than a lot of people think, which I like that. And I would agree. A while back, she had realized that there just wasn't a ton of research for this age group, which she found is a big miss considering how many like major life changes happened during this time. Like people have career changes, they get married, they have kids, like there's a lot of stuff going on, but yet there wasn't a lot of research about it. So her and her colleagues did a study and they named this time period established adulthood, which honestly sounds a lot better than midlife crisis. But I was like, should I change my name on my podcast? And I'm like, established adulthood doesn't really have like a same ring to it. Right. But okay, so that's the name. I like that. So they expected their research to show that the main challenge of this age group was to be called like career and crunch. It's essentially like the collision of workplace. Oh, hello, Ginza. Hello. Thank you for joining us. It's essentially the collision of workplace demands and the demands for caring for others. So like trying to climb the ladder in your career while increasingly being expected to care for kids, tend to partner needs, or sometimes aging parents, which I'm very thankful I do not have yet. But what they found was actually quite surprising because of course people dealing with juggling like work and out of work responsibilities felt overwhelmed, like no duh. But they like never felt like they had enough time to get it all done. Like also no shit. But what was surprising was they felt profoundly satisfied and said that the same things that stressed them out actually brought them joy. And that's interesting, right? Because I think we're like programmed to assume joy comes by the lack of stress. Like you can't have stress and joy in the same place. But that's really not the case at all, is it? I mean, think about big life events. Getting married, yeah, that's stressful. But people say it's one of the best days of their lives. Having kids, yeah, stressful. But my hope is that it's also joyful and worth it. Buying a home, that is one of the worst and most stressful processes. And to be honest, almost like seemingly unnecessary stressful. But walking in with the keys in hand after closing, joyous. That is like the best word for that. I don't know if it's just because you bought a house or it's because the process is over, but either way, joyous. Our careers, no matter what job you have, there are stresses, right? But that doesn't mean you can't also find joy in it. It's actually like hard to think of something that truly brings joy that doesn't have some stress associated with it. Even relationships. Solid, healthy relationships are anything but perfect, which would mean stress is involved sometimes. I mean, healthy relationships, sometimes they have like difficult conversations or arguments. People in healthy relationships work together to solve problems. They support each other through hard times. In fact, if a relationship has no conflict, then guess what? It's actually not healthy. Because that pretty much just means someone is holding back or they're like not being themselves or they're sweeping problems under the rug, which there is no way you can find real joy from your relationship. And I'm not just talking like sexual or love relationship, like friendships, parents, anything. If it's based in keeping the peace and avoiding conflict, that does not produce joy. Like you need to deal with things, which can be stressful, and move past them to find joy. And what's even more interesting is that their studies showed people at 36 felt like they were at their prime. That after years of working to develop careers and relationships, people reported feeling as though they had finally arrived. And this is really interesting because in my Generation of Renters episode, I talked about when I moved to Chicago. I was like in my 20s, early 20s, mid 20s. And I had felt like I arrived every time I saw the Sears Tower walking my dog in my neighborhood. But looking back, I mean, I may have arrived at my location, like if Google Maps was like, you have arrived, destination on the left. But I had so much further to go before I truly arrived at what I would consider my destination, like my true destination. I would say I feel like maybe I'm at my prime right now. I am more self-confident than ever. I no longer care so much about what others think of me. It's not that I don't care, but I definitely care a lot less. I am more confident in my body now than I was in my 20s, which is like kind of crazy if you think about it. Like, I definitely feel like your 20s is when you should feel like the best about your body, but I think I'm actually more fit than I was back then. And I know myself better now. I mean, I've done the work on myself and I've taken the time to truly dive into what makes me who I am and what do I care about. And I've gone through my social and support circle and listen, I pulled some weeds, okay? Not necessarily weeds that were like doing me harm in most cases, but like weeds that just like weren't serving me in a positive way, right? They didn't fit with the decor. They didn't like fit with the garden. I said, like, I'm talking like if I know anything about gardening, like I have fake plants in my house because like, don't give me a real plant. It will die. But I used to always say like, the more the merrier. And like Christian hates that term. He's always like, it's not the more the merrier. And you know what? He's right. Because now I have a smaller group that I turn to. Right. And you know what? I no longer believe the more is merrier. I now truly enjoy smaller groups and one-on-one time with people that I care about. Because when you're surrounded by a lot of people, your relationships like pretty much stay surface level, right? I mean, I look back at my 20s and listen, when I moved to Chicago, my social calendar was a bumpin', okay? I was hanging out with like this big group of friends. There was like 20 plus people in this group. And they were always inviting me to something. Like my calendar was packed. Okay. And there were a lot of us in between parties and, oh my God, we'd go to like so many charity events for what? I don't know. But there was like, you know, base price, all you can drink. So like, sure, sign me up. It's like, there's nothing better about like getting drunk. I mean, I'm sure there's things better, but in this context, there's nothing better about getting drunk and knowing your money went to a good cause. It's like added bonus. But like bar crawls, sporting events, like whatever it was, Super Bowl parties, etc. There was always something going on, which seemed great. And listen, for a while, I thought that that was bringing me a lot of joy. Like, I mean, I had some like really good times. I had a lot of laughs, whatever. But as I get older, I realize that what do I even like know about these people? I mean, I consider them my friends, but do I even know their middle name? Like, do I know what drives them? What do they value? Like, who they are deeper? And listen, that doesn't make them bad people. And they weren't. By all accounts, like, they were perfectly nice, genuine people. And they just wanted to have fun together. And they enjoyed each other's company. But hanging out with 10 plus people every time you go somewhere means that your conversations are either focused on, like, the common denominator and what everyone, like, can talk about. Or whoever is like the loudest person in the room, which listen, like a lot of times it's me, but actually in that group, it wasn't, which is crazy. That really says a lot. So you never go deeper. You never like truly connect. And now I honestly don't hang out with any of them. Not a single one. I mean, we're still social media friends. And I do go back, and I don't stalk them on social media, but I look back from time to time and I see how they're doing because they really are great people. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. But as I've gotten older, I've like curated this group of people that I truly connect with on a deeper level. And that's what brings me joy, right? That's what brings me joy at 38. Not every convo I have with friends is happy. I mean, hell, sometimes we're crying. In fact, you know, we always joke, my friend Catherine and I, like, I don't know why. I think it was like a really stressed out time in my life. There was like a lot of stuff going on. But we had this one bar called Anolo Wine Bar that we pretty much called like our cry bar because, and it was mostly me, like mostly me, I would cry. Maybe Catherine cried once or twice, but it was mostly me because I'm a crier. But we would literally, it just seemed like every time we went there, we'd be like drinking wine and we'd end up crying. And it just, I swear to God, I would have loved to like get in the minds of the people that work there because they're probably like, oh, these two girls are back. Someone's going to be like crying later. Like, I mean, we're like those people. And that's like the only time we would go there. So like, but I mean, you know, you hang out with your friends, you get in like deep conversations and you cry sometimes. And sometimes you argue, but you know what? It's genuine and it's authentic. And therefore it has greater value in my life than the number of people I can call on to hang out. I mean, I still know people at my age that talk about their like 20 plus friends, like Ramona Singer from Real Housewives. I mean, she's not my age, let's be clear, but it kind of reminds me of her, right? Like there was like last season or maybe two seasons ago, I don't know, where she was talking about like, oh, my 60 plus girlfriends, my 60 girlfriends. And all the other Real Housewives were like, bitch, you don't have 60 friends. Like, if you have 60 friends, you don't know who the fuck they are. And it's true, right? Like, you all know these people. It's like every weekend they have like five new names. Like, oh, this weekend I hung out with blah, 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 blah. And they're like spitting off names that you've never heard of, but they're talking about them like they're like best friends. Like, they hang out with them all the time. And you're like, really? I've never heard that freaking name in my life. Or that person that's never truly like has time because they're always just like so busy. Like, I'm so busy. I have all this like abundance of parties and events. It's like, girl, you're in your like mid 30s, like early 40s. Like, I'm not jealous. Okay. I'm not jealous of you. Like, I may only pretty much have like a handful of friends I can call up today to go get dinner, but I'm confident that I'm going to know those people in the next 10 years. Okay. Like, you're not going to know these people in the next year. To close out today, while it might feel like I'm currently in my prime, the issue that I have with the term is that if your prime is 36, then what? It feels like a really pessimistic view of life. Like, I hope you enjoyed your happiest year because that was it. I don't think so. If our prime is defined as the time we felt the most self-confident, emotionally and mentally healthy, and joyous, then my goal as I head into my 40s and beyond is to continue my prime. What if we spent the rest of our lives letting go of what doesn't serve us and focusing on what brings us joy? If we do that, then maybe our prime never has to end. Until next time.